Hello. Still, we are in chapter 11, the master of the work. A transcendent, who is beyond all world and all nature, and yet possesses the world and its nature, who has descended with something of himself into it, and is shaping it into that which as yet it is not, is the source of our being, the source of our works and their master. I suppose we should pause a little and note that there are several sections in the Gita which are directly relevant to what Sri Aurobindo writes here in the fourth chapter, the sixth shloka, the 35th, in the 13th chapter, shlokas 28 and 29, in the last chapter, 18, shloka 46, and you might also look at the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, shlokas 17 and 18. Here's a translation of a couple of verses from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, the one which first mentions yoga. This is 1.3. Those who followed dhyana and yoga saw the Atma Shakti, the self power of the divine, hidden in his own gunas. He is the one who rules over all these causes. And a few verses later, what is joined together as perishable and imperishable, as manifest and unmanifest, Isha, the Lord, supports it all. Without the Lord, Isha, the soul is bound by aiming at enjoyment. By knowing the Deva, the God, by identity, one is released from all fetters. So let's read that first sentence again. A transcendent who is beyond all world and all nature, and yet possesses the world and its nature, who has descended with something of himself into it and is shaping it into that which as yet it is not, is the source of our being, the source of our works, and their master. But the seat of the transcendent consciousness is above, in an absoluteness of divine existence, Sat. And there too is the absolute power, Tapas, truth, Vijnana, bliss, Ananda of the eternal, of which our mentality can form no conception, and of which even our greatest spiritual experience is only a diminished reflection in the spiritualized mind and heart, a faint shadow, a thin derivate. In other words, the experience of Satchit Ananda in its transcendent source, is absolutely real. But how it is transcribed into the waiting instruments of mind, life, and body is another matter. They can't hold it. They can't contain that magnificence, that infinity. So here, the direct reference to Satchit Ananda. Yet proceeding from it, from Satchit Ananda, yet proceeding from it, there is a sort of golden corona of light, power, bliss, and truth, a divine truth consciousness, as the ancient mystics called it, a supermind, a gnosis, vijnana, with which this world of a lesser consciousness proceeding by ignorance is in secret relation, and which alone maintains it and prevents it from falling into a disintegrated chaos. So this great power of knowledge, vijnana, this vast, the mahas, this supramental consciousness, is never absent any of the doings of the cosmos or the workings of an individual. Always secretly it guides, unseen, undetected. The powers we are now satisfied to call gnosis, intuition, or illumination are only fainter lights of that of which that is the full and flaming source. And between the highest human intelligence and it, there lie many levels of ascending consciousness, highest mental or overmental, which we would have to conquer before we arrive there, or could bring down its greatness and glory here. Of course, Sri Aurobindo, during his experience in solitary confinement in the Alipur jail, discovered the secret to these overhead levels of consciousness and pursued them assiduously as soon as he was able to decamp to Pondicherry and really fasten himself to a rigorous tapasya there. Each plane had its own light, its own truth, and yet none was capable of transforming the matrix, the vehicle that supported and held it. And so he would proceed to a greater level, absorb, ennoble the whole being with its light, and yet still find it insufficient to the integral task that he aimed at. Yet, however difficult, he writes, that ascent, that victory, is the destiny of the human spirit, and that luminous descent or bringing down of the divine truth is the inevitable term of the troubled evolution of the earth nature. That intended consummation is its raison d'être, our culminating state, and the explanation of our terrestrial existence. So it is to achieve that transition into the knowledge consciousness of the supramental that is the reason we're here. We exist to do this within and for the cosmos. For though the transcendental divine is already here as the Purushottama in the secret heart of our mystery, he is veiled by many coats and disguises of his magic worldwide yoga maya. It is only by the ascent and victory of the soul here in the body that the disguises can fall away and the dynamis of the supreme truth replace this tangled weft of half-truth that becomes creative error, this emergent knowledge that is converted by its plunge into the inconscience of matter and its slow partial return towards itself into an effective ignorance. So it is by yoga maya, that is the capacity of the Supreme, to take the fullness of its own being and to deposit it unseen into that which it wishes to install as a finitude. So the immense becomes the small. And this, of course, goes back to the Gita, 4th chapter, 6th shloka, or the 7th chapter, 25th shloka. For here in the world, though the gnosis is there secretly behind existence, what acts is not the gnosis, not the knowledge, but a magic of knowledge ignorance, an incalculable yet apparently mechanical overmind maya. This is a direct reference to that chapter that he would retitle in The Life Divine in Book 1, it's Chapter 28, now titled Supermind Mind and the Overmind Maya. The Overmind Maya, he points out, is not an agency of falsehood, it's not an agency of ignorance, but it is that last stance as the teeming manyness comes to the front, where it says, in a sense, to each line of separating development, yes, you are true, go on about your career. And so the many radiate out. The problem is that in radiating out and leaving the unity behind, then they lose the oneness that glues it all together. And the many stand apart from each other. Perhaps they work well together, perhaps they do not. In the supramental and even in the larger spheres of the overmental consciousness, that oneness is not absent, is not lost. It is in the background, but it is not lost. So this measuring out of the infinite through the portal of the overmind view, vast as it is, colossal though it is, global, cosmic, still is not the direct expression of the supramental and loses its authentic signature. The divine appears to us here in one view as an equal, inactive, and impersonal witness spirit, an immobile, consenting Purusha, not bound by quality or space or time, whose support or sanction is given impartially to the play of all action and energies which the transcendent will has once permitted and authorized to fulfill themselves in the cosmos. And here, of course, we're very familiar by now with Purusha Prakriti, but this is Purusha written a little bit larger. This is not simply the consenting Purusha, but an all-supporting Purusha. So some connection to the universe is implied, as if a personification of Shiva, vast, supporting the infinite, play of nature without being involved in it personally, as myth would have it. This witness spirit, this immobile self in things, seems to will nothing and determine nothing. Yet we become aware that his very passivity, his silent presence, compels all things to travel, even in their ignorance, towards a divine goal, and attracts through division towards a yet unrealized oneness. Yet no supreme, infallible divine will seems to be there, only a widely deployed cosmic energy, or a mechanical executive process, prakriti. This is one side of the cosmic self. The other presents itself as a universal divine, one in being, multiple in personality and power, who conveys to us, when we enter into the consciousness of his universal forces, a sense of infinite quality and will and act and worldwide knowledge and a one yet innumerable delight. For through him, we become one with all existences, not only in their essence, but in their play of action. See ourself in all and all in ourself. Perceive all knowledge and thought and feeling as motions of the one mind and heart. All energy and action as kinetics of the one will and power. All matter and form as particles of the one body. All personalities as projections of the one person. All egos as deformations of the one and sole real I in existence. In him we no longer stand separate, but lose our active ego in the universal movement, even as by the witness who is without qualities and forever unattached and unentangled, we lose our static ego in the universal peace. And if you'll permit another section from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, this is in the third chapter, the opening verse. The one spreads the net, who rules with his powers, who rules all the worlds with his powers, the one who alone stands in their arising and continuance, who knows that, becomes immortal. Consonant with what we've just read from Sri Aurobindo, because again, it refers to the Lord as an immanent, a cosmically present person. And yet there remains a contradiction between these two terms, the aloof divine silence and the all-embracing divine action, which we may heal in ourselves in a certain manner, in a certain high degree, which seems to us complete, yet is not complete, because it cannot altogether transform and conquer. A universal peace, light, power, bliss is ours, but its effective expression is not that of the truth consciousness, the divine gnosis, but still, though wonderfully freed, uplifted, and illumined, supports only the present self-expression of the cosmic spirit and does not transform, as would a transcendental descent, the ambiguous symbols and veiled mysteries of a world of ignorance. Ourselves are free, but the earth consciousness remains in bondage. Only a further transcendental ascent and descent can entirely heal the contradiction and transform and deliver. So if we realize the truth of the universality of the divine, that everything here is imbued with the divine presence, working within the orbit of how it is stationed here in the universe does not impart to us any power to transform it. Always we will be working inside the enginery of Prakriti. So though we're aware of the universal Godhead, we still work within its known and accepted and manifested powers. To transform that, we have to cross this line. We have to cross above into the transcendent and return with a power from there, which can affect the transformation we seek. For there is yet a third intensely close and personal aspect of the Master of Works, which is a key to his sublimest hidden mystery and ecstasy. For he detaches from the secret of the hidden transcendence and the ambiguous display of the cosmic movement an individual power of the divine that can mediate between the two and bridge our passage from the one to the other. So he spent the last couple of pages describing the nature of the transcendence and describing the nature of the universal. But it is the individual that is the key to both here. In this aspect, the transcendent and universal person of the divine conforms itself to our individualized personality and accepts a personal relation with us, at once identified with us as our supreme self, and yet close and different as our master, friend, lover, teacher, our father and our mother, our playmate in the great world game, who has disguised himself throughout as friend and enemy, helper and opponent, and in all relations and in all workings that affect us, has led our steps towards our perfection and our release. It is through this more personal manifestation that we are admitted to some possibility of the complete transcendental experience. For in him we meet the one not merely in a liberated calm and peace, not merely with a passive or active submission in our works, or through the mystery of union with the universal knowledge and power filling and guiding us, but with an ecstasy of divine love and divine delight that shoots up beyond silent witness and active world power to some positive divination of a greater beatific secret. So it is the core of the individual soul who is cognate with the Supreme as Lord, and yet in whom we can have the sweet interplay of difference and regard the divine not only as identical to us, but as friend, as master, and all the other relationships that are possible. So the Gita, in the last chapter, 18, has this in its 61st verse. The Lord is seated in the heart of all beings, turning all beings, mounted upon a machine by his Maya. And again, here, Maya is not a tool of ignorance or of cunning deceit, but that which makes the magic happen. He continues, for it is not so much knowledge leading to some ineffable absolute, not so much works lifting us beyond world process to the originating supreme knower and master, but rather this thing most intimate to us, yet at present most obscure, which keeps for us wrapped in its passionate veil the deep and rapturous secret of the transcendent Godhead, and some absolute positiveness of its perfect being, its all-concentrating bliss, its mystic ananda. So in that last chapter of the Gita, this is the 65th verse, the one that Krishna says, speaking as Purushottama, is the great secret, the great teaching. Become my-minded, my lover and adorer, a giver to me. Offer yourself to me. To me you will come. That I promise, because you are dear to me. My-minded means oneness in knowledge. Lover and adorer, wrapped in the beatific experience of union and communion. A giver, an offerer. By that, you must enter into the world and embrace it and discover it and win it. So all the three aspects of the being, knowledge, works, and love, fuse in that experience of oneness in the divine. But the individual relation with the divine does not always or from the beginning bring into force a widest enlargement or a highest self-exceeding. So the widest enlargement is the cosmic. The highest self-exceeding is the transcendent, and he's speaking here about the individual. At first, this Godhead, close to our being or imminent within us, can be felt fully only in the scope of our personal nature and experience. A leader and master, a guide and teacher, a friend and lover, or else a spirit, power, or presence, constituting and uplifting our upward and enlarging movement by the force of his intimate reality, inhabiting the heart, or presiding over our nature from above, even our highest intelligence. It is our personal evolution that is his preoccupation, a personal relation with him that is our joy and fulfillment, the building of our nature into his divine image that is our self-finding and perfection. The outside world seems to exist only as a field for this growth and a provider of materials or of helping and opposing forces for its successive stages. Our works done in that world are his works. But even when they serve some temporary universal end, their main purpose for us is to make outwardly dynamic or to give inward power to our relations with this immanent divine. Many seekers ask for no more or see the continuation and fulfillment of this spiritual flowering only in heavens beyond. The union is consummated and made perpetual in an eternal dwelling place of his perfection, joy, and beauty. But this is not enough for the integral seeker. However intense and beautiful, a personal, isolated achievement cannot be his sole aim or his entire experience. A time must come when the personal opens out into the universal. Our very individuality, spiritual, mental, vital, physical even, becomes universalized. It is seen as a power of his universal force and cosmic spirit, or else it contains the universe and that ineffable wideness which comes to the individual consciousness when it breaks its bonds and flows upward towards the transcendent and on every side into the infinite. You see, become like the divine and occupy all poises at once, secure in the transcendence, vast and embracing in the universal, true and good in the individual. So we'll pause there. Since today is the 29th of March here in America, and the 30th of March in India, I think we can read from the mother tonight in her prayers and meditations on those days which are most relevant to her as she is coming to Pondicherry. Let's read March 28, 1914 first. From the time we started, and every day more and more, in all things we can see thy divine intervention. Everywhere thy law is expressed, and I need all my inner conviction to feel that this is perfectly natural, so that I do not pass from wonder to wonder. At no moment do I feel that I am living outside thee, and never have the horizons appeared vaster to me, and the depths at once more luminous and unfathomable. Grant, O divine teacher, that we may know and accomplish our mission upon earth better and better, more and more, that we may make full use of all the energies that are in us, and thy sovereign presence become manifest ever more perfectly in the silent depths of our soul, in all our thoughts, all our feelings, all our actions. I find it almost strange to speak to thee, so much is it thou who livest in me, thinkest and lovest. And here's what she noted. Pondicherry, March 29, 1914. O thou whom we must know, understand, realize, absolute consciousness, eternal law, thou who guidest and illuminest us, who movest and inspirest us, grant that these weak souls may be strengthened, and those who fear be reassured. To thee I entrust them, even as I entrust to thee our entire destiny. And then, March 30, 1914. In the presence of those who are integrally thy servitors, those who have attained the perfect consciousness of thy presence, I become aware that I am still far, very far from what I yearn to realize. And I know that the highest I can conceive, the noblest and purest, is still dark and ignorant beside what I should conceive. But this perception, far from being depressing, stimulates and strengthens the aspiration, the energy, the will to triumph over all obstacles, so as to be at last identified with thy law and thy work. Gradually, the horizon becomes distinct, the path grows clear, and we move towards a greater and greater certitude. It matters little that there are thousands of beings plunged in the densest ignorance. He whom we saw yesterday is on earth. His presence is enough to prove that a day will come when darkness shall be transformed into light, and thy reign shall be indeed established upon earth. O Lord, divine builder of this marvel. My heart overflows with joy and gratitude when I think of it, and my hope has no bounds. My adoration is beyond all words. My reverence is silent. And if you'll be a little more patient, I'll read a section from Savitri. Since we've touched upon Maya and the various ends of existence, this is from Book 10, The Book of the Double Twilight, Canto 1, The Dream Twilight of the Ideal. And we begin on page 599, because we are a daring lot, are we not? All still was darkness, dread, and desolate. There was no change, nor any hope of change, in this black dream which was a house of void, a walk to nowhere in the land of naught. Ever they drifted, without aim or goal. Gloom led to worse gloom, depth to an emptier depth. In some positive non-being's purposeless vast, through formless wastes, dumb and unknowable. An ineffectual beam of suffering light, through the despairing darkness, dogged their steps, like the remembrance of a glory lost. Even while it grew, it seemed unreal there, yet haunted Nihil's chill, stupendous realm, unquenchable, perpetual, lonely, null, a pallid ghost of some dead eternity. It was as if she must pay now her debt, her vain presumption to exist and think, to some brilliant Maya that conceived her soul. This most she must absolve with endless pangs, her deep original sin, the will to be, and the sin last, greatest, the spiritual pride that made of dust equaled itself with heaven. Its scorn of the worm writhing in the mud, condemned, ephemeral, born from nature's dream, refusal of the transient creature's role, the claim to be a living fire of God, the will to be immortal and divine. In that tremendous darkness, heavy and bare, she atoned for all since the first act whence sprang the error of the consciousness of time, the rending of the inconscient's seal of sleep, the primal and unpardoned revolt that broke the peace and silence of the nothingness, which was before a seeming universe appeared in a vanity of imagined space, and life arose, engendering grief and pain. A great negation was the real's face, prohibiting the vain process of time. And when there is no world, no creature more, when time's intrusion has been blotted out, it shall last unbodied, saved from thought, at peace. Accursed in what had been her Godhead's source, condemned to live forever empty of bliss, her immortality, her chastisement, her spirit guilty of being, wandered doomed, moving forever through eternal night. But Maya is a veil of the absolute. A truth occult has made this mighty world. The Eternal's wisdom and self-knowledge act in ignorant mind and in the body's steps. The inconscient is the superconscient's sleep. An unintelligible intelligence invents creation's paradox profound. Spiritual thought is crammed in matter's forms. Unseen, it throws out a dumb energy and works a miracle by a machine. All here is a mystery of contraries. Darkness, a magic of self-hidden light. Suffering, some secret rapture's tragic mask. And death, an instrument of perpetual life. Although death walks beside us on life's road, a dim bystander at the body's start, and a last judgment on man's futile works, other is the riddle of its ambiguous face. Death is a stair, a door, a stumbling stride the soul must take to cross from birth to birth, a gray defeat pregnant with victory, a whip to lash us towards our deathless state. The inconscient world is the spirit's self-made room, eternal night, shadow of eternal day. Night is not our beginning nor our end. She is the dark mother in whose womb we have hid, safe from too swift awaking to world pain. We came to her from a supernal light. By light we live, and to the light we go. Namaste, Jai Ma. Fear nothing. Invite light. Penetrate beyond pain. Discover bliss. You will know why you have come and what work you have in this world. Our mission is mighty, but so are your souls. I honor you. I salute the divine in you. Namaste. Jai Ma.